This is the listening paper of the year 2014, Year 9, Final Examination in English. There are four tasks in the paper. You will hear all the tasks twice. Turn to Task 1. Task 1. You are going to hear people talk about things they find stressful. You will hear the recording twice. Before you listen, read the statements below. While you listen, match the statements B to G to the speakers and write letters B to G in the table given. There is one extra statement you do not need to use. An example 0 has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the statements. Example 0.
Having asthma can sometimes be a little bit of a pain because you have to stop in the middle of what you're doing to, you know, go take your inhaler or something. And if you're in the middle of a class, it can kind of be disruptive.
Speaker 1.
Senior year, I'm in a giant pool of stress because I have to figure out everything that's going to happen next year, moving on in my life. And kind of sometimes I just need to step back from it and, you know, sit down and think to myself, okay, it's all gonna happen, it's gonna be okay. You just have to take it as it comes, you know, roll with the punches.
Speaker 2.
I do find it difficult to talk to my parents because they put a lot of pressure on me, say I can tell them anything, but that just makes me feel like maybe they just want to know and I'm not so sure if I want to tell them about some of my problems.
Speaker 3.
Mainly, I worry about my grades. I don't really like having bad grades. Like, if I get a C or a D, that really upsets me.
Speaker 4.
There's definitely some pressure and stress in my life. With trying to balance so many different activities and the academics and everything. So really trying to find those times where I can just take a little step back from all the pressure and the stress, that really helps. And so I try to do that as much as possible.
Speaker 5.
I have a little brother who's about 1 year old, and my mom and I always argue because I have to watch him a lot, and it's part of my job is, you know, as a member of the family, I do have to look after my siblings. So I always think I should not have to look after them for very long.
Listen again and check your answers. Speaker 1.
Senior year, I'm in a giant pool of stress because I have to figure out everything that's going to happen next year, moving on in my life. And kind of sometimes I just need to step back from it and, you know, sit down and think to myself, okay, it's all going to happen. It's going to be okay. You just have to take it as it comes, you know, roll with the punches.
Speaker 2.
I do find it difficult to talk to my parents because they put a lot of pressure on me, say I can tell them anything, but that just makes me feel like maybe they just want to know, and I'm not so sure if I want to tell them about some of my problems.
Speaker 3.
Mainly, I worry about my grades. I don't really like having bad grades. Like, if I get a C or a D, that really upsets me.
Speaker 4.
There's definitely some pressure and stress in my life. with trying to balance so many different activities and the academics and everything. So really trying to find those times where I can just take a little step back from all the pressure and the stress, that really helps. And so I try to do that as much as possible.
Speaker 5.
I have a little brother who's about 1 year old, and my mom and I always argue because I have to watch him a lot, and it's part of my job is, you know, a member of the family, I do have to look after my siblings. So I always think I should not have to look after them for very long.
This is the end of task 1. Turn to task 2. Task 2. You are going to hear a talk about the London Underground. You will hear the talk twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, complete the sentences. Write no more than 2 words in each gap. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the sentences.
The Underground.
The Metro.
The Subway.
Whatever you call it, for Londoners, it's the Tube.
We're talking about the Tube because, amazingly, it's 150 years old.
Yes, it first started in 1863, and the first line, the Metropolitan Line.
1863, Richard, the idea that they thought about digging huge tunnels underneath London, that's amazing, isn't it?
Unbelievable. And it was all dug by hand. They'd cut out a big trench or a hole in the ground, and then they'd covered it up.
Yeah.
Put the roof on, and called cut and cover.
Cut and cover. And also, Richard, they used steam trains, didn't they?
I think that's even more remarkable. Steam trains under the ground. Mm. And I think they only got rid of the last steam train in 1961.
It's always been more than just a transport system, though, hasn't it, Richard? I'm thinking about during the Second World War.
Yes, I can remember the very famous pictures of people sheltering in the tube tunnels in the Second World War, using them as air raid shelters.
But when I was in London in the 1980s, a couple of times when I was late for work, rushing for a train, I'd rush onto the carriage just as it was about to leave and then realise with horror that I got onto a smoking carriage. And it was full of people smoking, so I'd have to get off at the next station. I mean, nowadays it's amazing to think that you could smoke on the Underground.
Yes, smoking was banned after a disaster fire at King's Cross Station in 1987, and they believe that someone had dropped a cigarette on the old wooden escalators.
Mm.
So from that time, they changed all the escalators, made them all metal, and of course, that's when they banned smoking.
Listen again and check your answers.
The Underground.
The Metro.
The Subway.
Whatever you call it, for Londoners, it's the Tube.
We're talking about the Tube because, amazingly, it's 150 years old.
Yes, it first started in 1863, and the first line, the Metropolitan Line.
1863, Richard, the idea that they thought about digging huge tunnels underneath London, that's amazing, isn't it?
Unbelievable. And it was all dug by hand. They'd cut out a big trench or a hole in the ground, and then they'd covered it up.
Yeah.
Put the roof on, and called cut and cover.
Cut and cover. And also, Richard, they used steam trains, didn't they?
I think that's even more remarkable. Steam trains under the ground. Mm. And I think they only got rid of the last steam train in 1961.
It's always been more than just a transport system, though, hasn't it, Richard? I'm thinking about during the Second World War.
Yes, I can remember the very famous pictures of people sheltering in the tube tunnels in the Second World War, using them as air raid shelters.
But when I was in London in the 1980s, a couple of times when I was late for work, rushing for a train, I'd rush onto the carriage just as it was about to leave and then realise with horror that I got onto a smoking carriage.
Mm.
And it was full of people smoking, so I'd have to get off at the next station. I mean, nowadays it's amazing to think that you could smoke on the underground.
Yes, smoking was banned after a disaster, fire at King's Cross Station in 1987, and they believe that someone had dropped a cigarette on the old wooden escalators.
Mm.
So from that time, they changed all the escalators, made them all metal, and of course, that's when they banned smoking.
This is the end of Task 2. Turn to Task 3. Task 3. You are going to hear a talk about pickpockets. You will hear the talk twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, tick the correct answer, A, B, or C. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 45 seconds to read the sentences.
The Louvre in Paris claims to be the most visited art museum in the world, with almost 10 million visitors last year.
But for this week's podcast, we're not talking about art, we're talking about pickpockets.
So, Richard, what's the connection then between the Louvre and pickpockets?
Well, in April of this year, the Louvre had to close because many of the staff were on strike, complaining about the huge numbers of pickpockets there.
Yeah, so how are they working, Richard?
Well, the first thing, they weren't working alone. They're working in big gangs.
Right.
Actually quite aggressive gangs targeting visitors and also the staff.
Now, Paris, apparently, is one of the five cities where people have most complained about pickpockets.
It's Paris and also the big cities in Spain, Madrid, Barcelona,
Athens and Rome. We don't think the answer is to avoid going to those cities because they're very exciting, but we do have some top tips about not getting pickpocketed.
Well, the first rule really is always be on your guard. Quite simple, you've always got to be aware. It happened to me once. I was walking along a normal street and someone was walking towards me, and basically they made me stop. And as they stopped, a person behind me accidentally on purpose, bumped into me. And when he bumped into me, I could feel his hand go straight into my pocket in order to get my wallet. Fortunately, I was aware, so I managed to grab his hand, take it out of my pocket, and then I just disappeared.
But, you know, people are on holiday and they're relaxing and they want to look at the sights. They can't be on their guard all the time.
You have to be.
Yeah. But another idea is wearing a money belt. That's very popular these days. But again, you've got...
I have another story of that. This time in Indonesia, someone told me they had a money belt on. They were crowded by a number of people on this bus. And then all of a sudden, all these people left the bus and he looked onto the ground and he saw his passport. And he thought, how was that there?
On the floor of the bus?
On the floor of the bus. And then he looked down, and what they'd actually done, they'd crowded him, and with a very sharp knife, had knifed through his T-shirt, through his money belt, taken his money, and then just thrown his passport on the floor. He felt nothing.
I think the best thing, really, is to carry a day's spending in your pocket. Only take the amount that you're actually prepared to lose, right?
Right, okay.
So, do you really need your credit cards for that day? Don't have your passport with you. If you need your passport, have a photocopy of it. So I think that, you know, decide what you're going to do today. Think about how much money you need for that, and leave the rest in, you know, obviously in a lock-up place in the hotel.
Good advice.
And I would also say, Richard, that you should, if you're on holiday, leave your mobile phone behind. But I think one of the problems with that is that people are now using their mobile phones as cameras, aren't they?
I think it's very common in Italy. People have their lunch al fresco, leave their mobile phone on the table. Someone comes up on a scooter and just grabs the mobile phone off the table.
Yes, gone. Yes. Never leave your mobile phone out.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, Richard, people are on holiday, so they should relax, shouldn't they?
Well, you've got to be aware, but also you've got to have a good time, really, haven't you? That's the main thing.
Yes.
And not worry about it too much.
Listen again and check your answers.
The Louvre in Paris claims to be the most visited art museum in the world, with almost 10 million visitors last year.
But for this week's podcast, we're not talking about art, we're talking about pickpockets.
So, Richard, what's the connection then between the Louvre and pickpockets?
Well, in April of this year, the Louvre had to close because many of the staff were on strike complaining about the huge numbers of pickpockets there.
Yeah, so how are they working, Richard?
Well, the first thing, they weren't working alone, they were working in big gangs.
Right.
Actually quite aggressive gangs targeting visitors and also the staff.
Now, Paris, apparently, is one of the five cities where people have most complained about pickpockets.
It's Paris and also the big cities in Spain, Madrid, Barcelona,
Athens and Rome. We don't think the answer is to avoid going to those cities because they're very exciting, but we do have some top tips about not getting pickpocketed.
Well, the first rule really is always be on your guard. Quite simple, you've always got to be aware. It happened to me once. I was walking along a normal street and someone was walking towards me and basically they made me stop. And as they stopped, a person behind me accidentally on purpose, bumped into me. And when he bumped into me, I could feel his hand go straight into my pocket in order to get my wallet. Fortunately, I was aware, so I managed to grab his hand, take it out of my pocket, and then I just disappeared.
But, you know, people are on holiday and they're relaxing and they want to look at the sights. They can't be on their guard all the time.
You have to be.
Yeah. But another idea is wearing a money belt. That's very popular these days. But again, you've got...
I have another story of that. This time in Indonesia, someone told me they had a money belt on. They were crowded by a number of people on this bus. And then all of a sudden, all these people left the bus and he looked onto the ground and he saw his passport. And he thought, how was that there?
On the floor of the bus?
On the floor of the bus. And then he looked down and what they'd actually done, they'd crowded him and with a very sharp knife had knifed through his T-shirt, through his money belt, taken his money and then just thrown his passport on the floor. He felt nothing.
I think the best thing really is to carry a day's spending in your pocket. Only take the amount that you're actually prepared to lose, right?
Right, okay.
So, do you really need your credit cards for that day?
Mm.
Don't have your passport with you. If you need your passport, have a photocopy of it. So, I think that, you know, decide what you're going to do today. Think about how much money you need for that and leave the rest in, you know, obviously in a lock-up place in the hotel.
Good advice.
And I would also say, Richard, that you should, if you're on holiday, leave your mobile phone behind. But I think one of the problems with that is that people are now using their mobile phones as cameras, aren't they?
I think it's very common in Italy. People have their lunch al fresco, leave their mobile phone on the table. Someone comes up on a scooter and just grabs the mobile phone off the table.
Yes, gone. Yes. Never leave your mobile phone out. But at the end of the day, Richard, people are on holiday, so they should relax, shouldn't they?
Well, you've got to be aware, but also you've got to have a good time, really, haven't you? That's the main thing.
Yes.
And not worry about it too much.
This is the end of task 3. Turn to task 4. Task 4. You are going to hear a writer talking about his childhood. You will hear the talk twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, complete the sentences. Write no more than 2 words in each gap. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the sentences.
Oh, what was I like as a child? Oh man, that's a horrific story, I'm sure. I was not a big reader, for one thing. I didn't like books until I was probably 11 or 12. I did not like the books that kids were told to read in the classroom. I thought they were boring. I couldn't relate to them. I didn't know why people were so interested in them. It wasn't really until I got into fantasy books. That was my doorway into reading, and it took a long time. My parents were both teachers. My mom taught art in high school, and my dad was a vocational ed teacher back when they had such things. So there was that. There was the fact that I was a kind of an introspective kid. I wasn't like into sports or any of that. I was sort of a quiet kid, and so I would be more likely to play with Legos or make imaginary worlds than I was to be outside tossing a football around. It was my 8th grade English teacher who really opened a lot of doors for me. She was the teacher who suggested that I could be a writer and sort of tried for the first time to get me to send in a paper, a story rather, to a magazine. Greek mythology spoke to me when I was a kid. Your typical Greek hero is half god, half man, and they're sort of stuck in between worlds. They don't really fit in either place. And I think a middle school kid feels kind of like that. They're not really an adult. They're not really a kid. They're sort of stuck in the middle of two worlds, just like that hero is. So I think they have a natural connection with the Greek heroes. I've talked to a lot of young writers, and what I typically say to them is that there are 3 things you have to do if you want to write. The first is you have to read a lot. That's where you're going to get your fuel. You're going to sort of ingest those voices and learn what it is to be a writer by reading what other people have written before you. So you have to be a reader if you want to write. The second thing is you have to practice. Writing is like a sport. It's like athletics. If you don't practice, you don't get any better. You can't just talk about doing it. You have to actually sit in the chair and get out the keyboard or get out the pad of paper. If you can do a little bit every day, that's great. It doesn't have to be a lot, but even a page a day will build up your writing muscles and you'll get better at what you're doing. And the third thing, just as important as the other two, is that you can't give up. A lot of people don't get published. It's not because they couldn't have. It's because they gave up. They didn't keep at it. They didn't finish that story they were thinking about finishing. They got one rejection note and they thought it was the end of the world. You have to keep going. You have to listen to all those writers who talk about the ream of rejection notes that they had before they finally found the story that they were really meant to tell. And that's the thing too. You have to find the story, not just that you think it would be cool to write, but that sort of grabs you and says, oh, you have to write me. That's the story that you should be writing.
Listen again and check your answers.
Oh, what was I like as a child? Oh man, that's a horrific story, I'm sure. I was not a big reader, for one thing. I didn't like books until I was probably 11 or 12. I did not like the books that kids were told to read in the classroom. I thought they were boring. I couldn't relate to them. I didn't know why people were so interested in them. It wasn't really until I got into fantasy books. That was my doorway into reading, and it took a long time. My parents were both teachers. My mom taught art in high school, and my dad was a vocational ed teacher back when they had such things. So there was that. There was the fact that I was a kind of an introspective kid. I wasn't like into sports or any of that. I was sort of a quiet kid, and so I would be more likely to play with Legos or make imaginary worlds than I was to be outside tossing a football around. It was my 8th grade English teacher who really opened a lot of doors for me. She was the teacher who suggested that I could be a writer and sort of tried for the first time to get me to send in a paper, a story to a magazine. Greek mythology spoke to me when I was a kid. Your typical Greek hero is half god, half man, and they're sort of stuck in between worlds. They don't really fit in either place. And I think a middle school kid feels kind of like that. They're not really an adult. They're not really a kid. They're sort of stuck in the middle of two worlds, just like that hero is. So I think they have a natural connection with the Greek heroes. I've talked to a lot of young writers, and what I typically say to them is that there are three things you have to do if you want to write. The first is you have to read a lot. That's where you're going to get your fuel. You're going to sort of ingest those voices and learn what it is to be a writer by reading what other people have written before you. So you have to be a reader if you want to write. The second thing is you have to practice. Writing is like a sport. It's like athletics. If you don't practice, you don't get any better. You can't just talk about doing it. You have to actually sit in the chair and get out the keyboard or get out the pad of paper. If you can do a little bit every day, that's great. It doesn't have to be a lot, but even a page a day will build up your writing muscles and you'll get better at what you're doing. And the third thing, just as important as the other two, is that you can't give up. A lot of people don't get published. It's not because they couldn't have. It's because they gave up. They didn't keep at it. They didn't finish that story they were thinking about finishing. They got one rejection note and they thought it was the end of the world. You have to keep going. You have to listen to all those writers who talk about the ream of rejection notes that they had before they finally found the story that they were really meant to tell. And that's the thing too. You have to find the story, not just that you think it would be cool to write, but that sort of grabs you and says, oh, you have to write me. That's the story that you should be writing.
This is the end of the listening paper. Now turn to the reading paper.